Welcome back to another bonus episode of the Talking Stocks podcast. Joe and Todd with you as always, along with our special guest, Simon Erickson. Simon is the founder and CEO of Seven Investing. We're super happy to have you here, Simon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Joe. I'm glad to be here too.
Absolutely. So why don't, to kick it off, I'll let you kind of introduce yourself a little bit. And why don't you just kind of tell us like how you got into investing to begin with?
Sure. Thanks very much for the opportunity. You're founder and CEO of Seven Investing now. I think that the best story is that I kind of always got a paycheck based on reading the tea leaves of the future, right? So in my 20s, I was a sales rep that was out there shaking hands and racking up frequent flyer miles. You know, talking with people that were always trying to make new products that would make them more money at higher margins. And so you saw these things developing out there like hydraulic fracturing and organic farming and personal care products. And we were selling the specialty chemicals that went into a lot of that. So as I guess the start of it was right out of college, just kind of getting out there and talking to people. I went back and got an MBA in entrepreneurship. So that definitely was applicable for somebody who wanted to start their business later on. And then I worked for a large oil company developing their renewable energy standards, their strategy for building out solar power. It was really kind of eye-opening to build the business plans for those, and unit economics kind of mandated everything. And then I worked for 7 years at the Motley Fool, ran a service there that was really focused on innovation and finding these higher-level trends. That put a different spin on things because now instead of being internal to a company and developing projects, you're looking at everything from the outside looking in, and just kind of a different way of thinking about the world when you're an investor versus when you're in an operational role. And then here in March of 2020, we launched Seven Investing, which is our site where we're looking to empower people to invest in the stock market. And we find our seven best stock market opportunities every single month and write reports about them. So well, I tell glad you, to be here.
Simon, I am just so stoked to have you on the show. Simon and I used to collaborate together in our time at the Motley Fool. It's always a genuine pleasure getting to talk with Simon about innovation. If I'm thinking innovation, I'm thinking Simon Erickson. And it's just wonderful to have him on the show because I want to really pick his brain for all of our listeners to kind of really get a good insight into how can we better think about innovation in our investing process? And, you know, Simon, I oftentimes, when I'm thinking about innovation, to help myself, I break it into two categories. I think macro innovation and micro innovation. So say macro innovation is EVs, maybe micro innovation is better battery technology. Or if macro innovation is monoclonal antibodies and their use in cancer to improve outcomes, maybe the micro innovation is by specific monoclonal antibodies or something like that. That kind of helps me along the way. But I think that even at going to an earlier stage of this, I mean, it sounds like it was a very natural progression for you to you know, you're going out, you're meeting with people in your 20s, you're seeing all of these really interesting products and, you know, potentially disruptive products, et cetera. If you haven't had that experience, like how should we be thinking about innovation and finding innovative ideas to invest in? I would love to have you sort of talk about how that whole process, how that workflow works for you.
Yeah, great question, Todd. Innovation comes from the market, right? Innovation is the market saying there are pain points of how things are going on right now, and we need to fix these. And we can pay this much money to fix these, and hopefully that's less than whatever is taking place right now. And so I had the fortune of, you know, being out there on the road 4 or 5 days a week at sales, and then one every month, you know, of the year for 4 years going to conferences and kind of seeing those pain points and piecing the puzzle together. But if you're really interested in finding innovation, which I think the question is, how do you spot this? It's not a financial thing at all at first. It's more of what is the market doing and why is it happening this way? You know, why are people adopting electric vehicles instead of internal combustion engines? Why are we looking at monoclonal antibodies? Why are we changing? Why are we looking at genomics, you know, as a new subjective way of developing drugs now when we've always done things a certain way before? Why are we using cloud-based software as opposed to developing everything on premise and building our own storage and our own computing capacity? There are reasons for each of those. You know, and people and companies and healthcare systems and the powers that be in the market are finding those better solutions. And then the smart companies are looking for these hurricane tailwinds to put a plane right in front of, so that they're gonna take advantage of them.
So would you say that it's fair to say, okay, let's identify a major pain point? Is that kind of a fair description? Say, okay, let's look at various industries or sectors or solutions, and let's try and figure out what the pain point is, and let's figure out how to address that pain point.
And every one of them has it. You know, we can pick any topics you guys would like to, any market, but just to throw an example out there at first is cybersecurity, right? How many hacks have we seen in the past decade? Whether it's Yahoo getting hacked, whether it's MSN getting hacked, whether it's Sony Pictures getting hacked or Target getting hacked. I mean, you just keep reading about these over and over, and you say, how can this not be fixed yet? The pain point is the solutions that are out there are specific to vendors that are trying their best to control this problem that keeps evolving, right? It's a puck that keeps moving around. You think you've got it figured out and you got it contained down, and then Wayne Gretzky's on the other side of the ice and he scores a goal on you. You can't see that coming. I mean, that was something that we needed to develop something. The market said we need to get something that's more innovative that can look at this solution as a whole rather than proprietary solutions.
So just taking this a little further. So cybersecurity, we start hearing about hacking and we say to ourselves, well, hacking is obviously a problem that companies are going to have to address. So then how would you take that the next step? You're saying to yourself, okay, I've identified my pain point, hacking, right? Now, how do I figure out how to turn that actually into an investment thesis?
Yeah, and so the next step is to find out who's actually addressing that. Like, what would be a solution that's addressing this pain point? And so, like, years ago, we kind of looked at, you know, there were companies like FireEye that were developing cloud-based cybersecurity solutions, right? This is very different than the firewalls that companies were setting around their own networks, which was kind of the go-to for the time, the Fortinets and the Palo Altos of the world. And it needed to be something that was more responsive than what was available. And you've seen that security even from the Norton antivirus days, you know, if you remember those, and you used to just kind of install something in your computer to protect yourself. Those went outdated as soon as the very next hack happened, right? And the same thing with the firewalls and everything else like that. I mean, there was something that needed to be kept up. And so now you're seeing more and more of a cloud-based security solution that offers a much more comprehensive solution.
Which makes a tremendous amount of sense, right, Simon? Because you're saying to yourself, okay, yeah, if I'm going to download some static solution, what good does that really do me if everybody else, if the burglar is continually innovating how they're going to hack you?
Yeah, you put on more and more locks on the front door and then they go in the window, right? You know?
Right. And what's interesting about that is because what it leads me to think is that you've identified a pain point. And then you say, okay, well, let's look at the solution providers that are addressing that pain point. But even as you're looking at the solution providers that are addressing that pain point, it's actually educating you to another innovation, which in this case would be the delivery of that service via the cloud.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk healthcare too, Todd. I know that, you know, you and I have chatted about healthcare for, I feel like it's been almost a decade now. But I mean, you know, why are we going to personalized healthcare now? You know, we've had a system of primary care physicians, you know, checking in and subjectively assessing your symptoms for decades, you know, but now we're starting to do genetic tests, you know, that are looking at your DNA, or we're catching cancer in earlier phases because we've got diagnostics that can find these small fragments of circulating tumor DNA floating around from a tumor of a cancer in your bloodstream. I mean, stuff like this is the result of limitations of the way that we've always gotten used to doing things. And so my style of investing has always been find out where the most interesting thing is, and you know, find the companies too that are leading the way. You will not bat 100% with this style of investing. If you're really, really good, you're batting 60%. If you're really, really good, but again, if you have companies that are 5 baggers, 10 baggers, 20 baggers, worth 20 times your original investment, you're more than making up for the losers because of the power of compounding.
So how do you go about finding a pain point that you maybe haven't identified before? So obviously there are a couple of different ways to do this, right? You might be sick of going to the grocery store for a single item, and so there's Amazon for that. But for certain pain points, you know, especially in healthcare, you might not have first or secondhand experience with that. So is there, are there publications you read or people you follow to kind of identify new opportunities like that?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. It, in my opinion, it has to be very, very technical, Joe. You can't just go out and assume that you're going to know an industry inside and out by reading some headlines that you searched on Google for that morning, right? You kind of have to hear this firsthand from the PhDs and the people that are presenting in conferences or giving TED Talks or are doctors. You know, they're the ones that are fed up and upset with something that is really keeping them from doing their job. And they've got resources, right? Hospitals have got tons of resources. Big businesses, CIOs have got tons of resources. But they're out there seeing, they're seeing what's going on, and they're speaking up about it. Mine has always been, my preference had always been to go to MIT conferences and go to South by Southwest and bio conferences and wherever else it was. And I was the annoying guy that would always be just, you know, chipping away at my laptop, taking notes in the back section so I wasn't disturbing people. And then I'd read through it a couple times with a couple beers on the plane ride home, and it'd start connecting the dots for me. But to answer your question, I think that, you know, it does have to be market-based. It has to be coming from people that really are living it every day. If you're trying to identify trends from just, you know, oh, Google what hottest trends are in 2021, that's more of a media, you know, announcement than it is about really insight of what's happening.
It's almost like you're saying, Simon, don't stick to page one of the Google search results.
Right. You got to find, I mean, you know, who's publishing that too? What's the bias of what's being published out there? But every
right, industry dig a little bit deeper, go to the industry journals, right? Kind of try and, you know, almost like a master class on whatever subject you're trying to learn more about. It's almost like you have to become a subject matter expert in a way if you're going to embrace innovation investing.
Yeah, I subscribe to MIT Tech Review. I recommend Gartner Magic Quadrant, you know, being familiar with that to figure out who the leaders are. Industry journals, you know, if you look at those, a lot of them, you know, scientific journals are really helpful out there. Try to get a perspective for who's spending money in the industry and what they're pretty pissed off about.
Yeah, great. And, you know, the interesting thing about that, though, and I guess, again, to try and work this further down for the investor, the average investor, okay, so we've identified the pain point, and maybe it's that, you know, we're running out of fossil fuels and we need to come up with some sort of new form of energy. And maybe that renewable energy is solar, or maybe it's wind, or maybe it's water, whatever it happens to be. So then we're going to the MIT or the industry journals, and we're learning as much as we can about solar, or learning as much as we can about these alternative or these renewable sources of energy, right? And then we're trying to say to ourselves, okay, now I've become maybe a subject matter expert in this theoretical innovation to the fact that we're running out of fossil fuels eventually. How do I then take that to the next step of narrowing the focus of a funnel of a sector or an industry down to an actionable number of stocks that I can really dive into then and figure out that they're going to be the winner? Right. I mean, how do you take it in your own process, in your own workflow? How do you take it then from the industry now becoming a subject matter expert to these are the stocks within that are going to offer that solution that I might want to consider for my portfolio?
Yep. So I would probably start with what the market share looks like for the existing companies. I mean, how is this industry split up and who's making the money off of it today? They have not a whole lot of reason to change because their golden goose is right there, right? Why do I want these newcomers taking my money away from me? Some companies do pretty well at disrupting themselves, which that's another conversation we could have, but typically the incumbents don't have the same reason to disrupt themselves and to change up the industry. They're getting, it's working well too well for them right now. And so spin that on the opposite side, and who are the newcomers that are seeing 100% revenue growth at the same time? Right? There might be small, they don't have the same relationships that those really big companies do with the biggest customers out there, but they're growing really quickly and they're starting to get talked about in those technical journals. Maybe there's kind of some group chats, you know, where techies and developers are saying, oh, you got to check out this, you know, this is something that's really neat. Maybe they have a community that's tapped into that. Like MongoDB has worked with a lot of developers for an alternative way of having a cloud-based database out there, which is very different than what Oracle did, right? So, I mean, that's an example of a company doing that. And so, I mean, like, this is textbook disruption. Is you got the whales in the industry that are making a ton of money, and then you got the smaller minnows that are much faster and growing much more quickly. And if you can identify them and kind of marry, okay, they've got the revenue growth, you kind of see what they're doing, and you kind of understand technically why what they're doing is a more interesting solution, that kind of gives you some signals of that might be your first kind of companies that you want to look at.
Absolutely. So we're narrowing down this funnel very, very nicely. And so we've got this basket of really high growth, promising companies with really strong revenue growth. And so the next kind of logical step here is profitability. So, you know, obviously companies oftentimes takes many, many years for companies to make money. And if they're healthcare, that could be a couple of decades. Look at a company like Moderna, for instance. So how do I word this? How important is it for a company when you're looking to invest for them to either be profitable or like their outlook, their trajectory to get profitable?
Yeah, another great question. So the trajectory is everything. The upfront profitability doesn't, to me, really matter as long as there's a case to be made that they're building upon themselves. And this isn't just a one-time thing. Like, so we talk a lot about COVID vaccines this year, but, you know, are those companies going to be rolling out the same number of doses 5 or 10 years from now as they are this year? I might argue they're not. I might argue this is in response to something that's going on rather than something they're building upon. But like, let's change. Okay, so let's talk about another industry, Todd. We've hit healthcare. We talked about EVs. We talked about cybersecurity. How about we talk about computing as the next example, right? Let's go somewhere else where years ago we looked at, Intel was the biggest CPU maker, right? Processors, everybody used, biggest ones, making fat margins and just hugely profitable. And there's this company called NVIDIA out there in San Francisco that starts making GPUs that all of a sudden they were much more efficient in the processing that they could do because they were doing it in parallel rather than series. And so you get trillions of operations per second at a much lower power capacity, using less power for more in computing. And so at first, this was great for rendering for videos, which everybody used them for graphics cards for your home PCs. And then the data center, you know, these people that were doing lots and lots of computations because they were hosting other software for people, they start saying, yeah, what is this GPU thing? We should start looking into saving money on the cooling bills and the power costs for our own data centers. And all of a sudden you see NVIDIA fostered this because they made it as easy as possible to start developing from a software perspective on their hardware, using GPUs to do more and more complex things. So they just kept rolling out more GPUs. They raised the prices every year. And before you know it, they become the standard in the data center. And now they're even doing more interesting things and machine learning inference and other stuff like that. So to answer the question, the trajectory is everything. You know, NVIDIA was not anywhere near what Intel was doing with CPUs, but they didn't have the same limitations of running things in series that was slowing them down. And processors were getting smaller and smaller, and Moore's Law was on everybody's mind. They found a disruptive way to solve for that. And did quite well for themselves, and the stock has done quite well for itself too in the last decade.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where I always look at it and say, what is the pathway to profitability? If as long as I have my thesis, I understand my cows, I understand my thesis, and then as I'm going through, I tend to look at, I'm interested in the delta, right? I'm always interested in the change, rate of change. So rate of change in revenue, rate of change in operating margin, rate of change in profitability. All I care about is that pathway, that trajectory, the potential for profitability. As long as I can continue to connect that dot, then I feel good about it. It sounds like that's kind of how you think about it too when you're talking about innovative companies, because you recognize upfront all of the investments that have to go into R&D and developing, building out their system, getting the market share that they need to reach a scale. That's going to cost money. So profitability is secondary. So maybe you're looking at very high revenue growth and you're looking at the rate of change in market share, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, can I see a situation where either gross margin improve or eventually leading to operating margin improvement? And then to take your NVIDIA example a little further, as you're going through, you've bought this innovative company and you're saying to yourself, okay, is there optionality where they're able to innovate into these new areas? I mean, I always thought in originally of NVIDIA as a compared to AMD in the graphics card space. But now it's so much more than just a gaming computer graphics card, right? With AI and machine learning and all of that. I mean, do you think that do you think about optionality when you're looking at an innovative company that maybe you've bought, or do you stay? How often will you look at your catalyst or your thesis for owning, say, an NVIDIA, and adjust it to also include these other innovations?
Yeah. So let's walk through NVIDIA just as an example here, right? So if you're a science nerd like I am, you're looking at first and saying, okay, how many trillions of operations per second can this GPU do versus the power that you're putting into it, right? That's the scientific, that's the pain point that the PhDs are talking about first. The second is the revenue growth of NVIDIA versus the existing companies out there, right? Intel's making things a little bit better, incrementally making a better CPU. You know, you see the new stuff coming out every year. NVIDIA's going like this. The market share starts to balance out. Now, to your point, Todd, is we've got a big company now. NVIDIA is not the small little disruptor that it used to be, but it's also not just making GPUs anymore, right? How many acquisitions has it made of Mellanox earlier this year, of Arm Holdings, you know, that it just made? I mean, these are $40 billion acquisitions at this point, but it wants to be an artificial intelligence company for the data center rather than just a GPU provider that was doing one small task before. And so as companies get better, like they started that way, they grew really quickly, but it started building upon itself. Oh yeah, we can do this. Oh, these smart NICs, you know, these will integrate with our GPUs. Oh, all of a sudden I can offer this broad basis of patents to you, Mr. Global Data Center Provider. And now I've got the full buffet of options and I've got my operating cost under control and my operating margins are rising. And now I've made some really killer acquisitions out there. I mean, I still think this is a great opportunity for investors, even though it's, what is it? I haven't looked recently, $400 billion market cap now. I mean, NVIDIA is becoming the standard, but they've always been forward-looking of what the industry wants to do rather than just sticking with one single solution and betting the farm on that. Optionality is very important.
Yeah, so we've talked about success and rapid growth in several industries now. So we've talked in the past couple of weeks on the show about selling a stock, knowing when to sell. So giving this a bit of an innovation focus, how do you identify when an innovation, whether it be a whole technology or just a specific company, has failed? And what do you do to kind of take action upon that?
I think that the reason to sell is mostly assuming the technology is still in place. I think it's a people thing more than anything. I mean, if you see your CEO you really like that leaves, or the really good people are leaving, and you just kind of see these bad, you know, reviews showing up on Glassdoor and stuff like that. I mean, that's why Yahoo is not the leader in search right now. You know, everyone wanted to work for Google and nobody wanted to work for Yahoo anymore. Apologies if anyone is offended by my comments on this show, but you know, you kind of see which way the wind is blowing and that the best people are going to those companies. I think we've modern example of that, maybe not as biting of an example as that one, but I think we are starting to see a lot of people that have come from the Salesforce mold that are now wanting to branch out and start cloud computing companies, whether that's Zuora, whether that's Okta, whether that's, Viva Systems came from sales. I mean, like, these are companies that have got leaders that kind of grew up seeing a really innovative thing, a really innovative company. And I would argue that Salesforce is, but it's different working in a really, really big company like that than if you could go out and do something really neat. And so I don't think that's a reason to sell Salesforce, so to speak. Like, I think your question was of when you sell a stock, but I think that the migration of the innovators necessarily comes from smaller companies. And so, then the other piece, and just the other part of that is, I think that the other thing you really want to keep an eye on is terrible allocation of capital by management. terrible acquisitions that light your money on fire, excessive stock-based compensation to people that just walk out the door because it's a revolving door of the CEO or the C-suite. I mean, stuff like that. You have to have a company that's willing to share the operational profits it's creating with you as an investor. And if they're just lighting money on fire or they're just, you know, throwing it away, you're not benefiting from that. So that's reason for me to walk out the door.
And how would you, Simon, how would you end up figuring that out? Would you be looking at things like return on invested capital, or would you, like, what are you, when you're trying to figure out, are they deploying my dollars wisely? Is it just that your gut, because you're staying up to date on what the changes are in that industry, or like, how are you?
Two beer conversation, Todd, which we'll have on the next podcast, because it's a long conversation that I could go for a while. That's my expression for a really complex, that's my Texas way of describing a complex answer. The easiest way is to just look at the allocation options that the company has. So yes, return on invested capital would tell you that. How are they sharing that in something that is good for you? And so the most straightforward way is a dividend. They are paying it out to you in cash. You can say, hey, I'm getting 8% a year dividend yield off of this company off the top. Slightly more complex, stock buybacks. They can use that to buy back their own shares. You got to do a little more analysis on that if you want to. Step up from that is internal projects where they've said, hey, we've got a hurdle rate that any company we, or not company, any project we put money into better have this percent return internally for us. But again, they're using your money to spend for those projects, so you can benefit from that. And then the hardest one, in my opinion, is acquisitions, because you just don't really know what you're getting into. People tend to make acquisitions when companies are hot and they're growing quickly and they overpay for them. We're familiar with Hewlett Packard and how they lit some money on fire with autonomy years ago. Examples like that still happen today. I would argue that 3D systems and 3D printing lit a lot of shareholder money on fire because they were really excited about getting, you know, small little plastic parts into everybody's desk that were 3D printed at home and just didn't catch on. But so that's kind of the way you walk through it. It's like, okay, you know, I guess the simpler metrics is like an operating margin. If you really want to get a nitty gritty, you do some homework on return on invested capital. But the bigger picture is, how are they deploying your money as a shareholder? And then the other piece of it that I want to touch on just briefly is turnover in the executive suite or the board of directors. Look at nuanced communications. How many people have left that company's board of directors and how many CEOs they've had over the last 5-10 years? That's a shining example that's not getting any traction because the people that come in are only there for a couple of years and not getting any kind of support for their strategy that they have going forward.
Great point. So now every week I like to ask Todd for a few different stock picks. We call this a smattering. And we've been doing this as we get guests on too. So I know we might be on some kind of shaky ground as far as specific ideas. So I'll let you take this as you wish, but I'd love to hear like 3 or 5 kind of, you know, general industries, sub-industries, ideas that you're really excited about in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, the first one just has to be diagnostics, medical diagnostics. Yeah. Again, Todd and I have chatted about this quite a bit over the years, but I think that just the cost of genomic sequencing is coming down so low, or not so low, but much lower in recent years, that it's enabling us to use it to detect cancer. And so diagnostics is basically, can you catch cancer other than it's when it's appearing as symptoms in stage 3, stage 4 cancer? And if we can crack that, oh my gosh, how many lives are we going to save? How much money are we going to save? How much better is this going to be for insurers and patients? And big, big thing going on in medical right now. Not easy because all of them are different. Every diagnostic test is not the same, but you're starting to see like some real traction. Non-small cell lung cancer is one of the early indications that we're seeing a lot of progress on this. And kind of correlated to that is the second trend, which is the drug development side of it, right? If you can identify and characterize, then you want to have drugs that are busting up those cancerous tumors. So personalized medicine, I think, is the other really interesting thing that's taking place right now. We're seeing the cost of CRISPR and CAR T therapies just falling as well. That's making them get reimbursement codes, you know, local coverage determinations from Medicare, and somebody who's going to pick up the tab for this. And that's going to translate into lives being saved and dollars being saved for the entire medical system that we're spending, what, $3.5 trillion a year on it or whatever now. So there's the healthcare piece of it. I really do think that we should be keeping an eye on quantum computing. I think that we're kind of just talking about that. Like, it's something that's kind of fascinating to people, and you kind of hear about it. It sounds like something in Star Trek. But, you know, you just saw China now claim quantum supremacy just a couple of weeks ago, that they've built a quantum computer that can crack algorithms quicker than any existing classical computer can. So all of our information on the internet is encrypted right now, right? All of your bank accounts, anything that's on the internet right now, we have faith that the internet is protecting all of that. But what if you have a computer that can just immediately crack all that encryption because it's billions of times faster? That changes everything about the internet. And we got to rewrite the rules, and we got to keep up. So this isn't one of those, it's like, oh yeah, we're just going to ease into it over the next decade. We're going to see a little bit of, all of a sudden, there's going to be a flame thrower right on your behind. And it's going to be, everybody's trying to adopt this as quickly as possible.
Simon, I am stoked that you brought that up because, you know, I follow you on Twitter. I love it. And if you're not following Simon on Twitter, you gotta. We'll make sure there's a link in the bottom so you know what the his Twitter handle is, so you can follow Simon. But you had a poll the other day, and it was talking about three different types of innovation, and which of those innovations do us Twitter in the Twitterverse think will be the biggest ones in the next 10 years. And I think if I remember correctly, you had said that you would actually have ordered them slightly different, and that quantum computing, you would have elevated and put that up at the top. And I agree with you. I think the biggest answer was CRISPR. I think that people are anticipating approvals in CRISPR that aren't going to come for still many years from now. I think that people are underestimating. I mean, the whole development timeline from cars was years, and this is going to be years as well. So I'm really interested in the fact you brought up quantum computing for that reason.
Yeah, and how about the pace of innovation, Todd? Like, you've got to go through FDA trials for CRISPR. There's going to be a lot of work, long timetables to get those worked out. I think we had space economy was the third option too, yes. Right? But I mean, that is incredibly complex too. I mean, you know, not even just the regulations and working with governments and who's going to fund these things, but that's going to be huge. That's a multi-trillion with a T-dollar market eventually, but quantum is going to just be so interesting to me because all of a sudden we're going to have to figure this out as quickly as possible. And I think that that's just a couple of years out, and I don't think we get paying enough attention to that story right now.
So you mentioned some of the healthcare stuff. I agree with you totally on diagnostics, personalized healthcare. It's just this huge, huge, and we're on the cusp. I love it. We're going to have this intersection between the actual DNA sequencing and the actual, in the drugs and the treatments and the interventions that we can do, and being able to unite those for this, to find the intervention that works best for that individual, which is just an amazing opportunity. So you talked about that. You talked about quantum computing. We touched on space earlier in the show. We were talking about, we hinted about AI, and we talked about machine learning, and we talked about solar, and we sort of skirted around the issue on renewables. Are there any other, is that kind of a good kind of smattering, if you will, of places for investors who are interested to be kind of starting to do their due diligence and doing those deep dives in the industry and information and stuff that they need to become subject matter experts?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the EV thing too, because I probably would put that in the list that, you know, there's a lot of discussion right now from some very smart people about climate. It goes on the political side of this, you know, it goes on the Silicon Valley side of this. But that's one that really technical people are trying to crack. Battery technology is such a hot topic right now. I know we've been trying for this for so long, and Elon's building gigafactories built on lithium ions all around the world, but there's some even more innovative stuff going on in batteries right now. Lithium metal batteries, you know, which has kind of been the no-no. You don't touch those, they're going to blow up, but you know, that's really, really being talked about. And when we talk about Internet of Things and batteries that are required for those to make them going from just smartwatches to something that would really be a lot bigger of a deal but doesn't need to be plugged in, that all hinges kind of on the same thing. Electric vehicles, same thing, range, you know, it's all interconnected with batteries, and I think that that's going to be a pretty hot topic in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, we've certainly given our viewers and listeners a lot of ideas for them to take and run with. We might need a follow-up episode. I feel like we've really just scratched the surface. So obviously you're always welcome back, Simon. And I guess with that, this is a good point to wrap up the show. So, Simon, it's been great having you on. Thank you so much for being here. Simon's Twitter handle, I believe, is @7innovator. I'll put that in the show notes as well. Yeah, and Todd and I will be back with a regular episode later in the week. Thank you all so much for watching and listening.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
See you soon.